Okay, our next company to present is E*TRADE, and CEO Paul Idzik took over in January of 2013. He's been there, again, for 3 years. I think this is his third conference. Paul also is a hockey fan as well, from Buffalo originally. The E*TRADE story is interesting, because they have really almost to, if you laid out a strategy as far as recovery from some of the issues from the crisis, E*TRADE's followed the recovery strategy almost to a T. With that, I will get into our talk with Paul Idzik, the CEO of E*TRADE. You're a veteran here now.
I am.
I want to start broad, once we get our fire started, and start about just overall observations at E*TRADE. When I say E*TRADE is at an inflection point, I know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the idea that the recovery, the credit part of your story has almost worked to a T. The capital recovery and the actual abundance of capital has worked to a T. Then finally, as you grow assets right to the SIFI limit. All those things point to me as a point where E*TRADE's at this point of sort of launching off. Do you feel the same way, or?
Well, Rich, I think we are at a point in the company's history where we're able to focus almost 100% of our energies on doing what the company was founded to do, and that's leveling the playing field for the retail investor and delivering the best possible set of tools and experiences for our active traders, our more passive investors, and for a bunch of the new investors we're attracting, for example, with the launch of our robo product, which just launched yesterday to pretty good fanfare. I think we have a lot going on, and I would say saying we're at an inflection point is fair. The thing I'd like to point out about the SIFI issue is our model allows us to go over that limit when we believe it's prudent so that we're able to manage the business appropriately because regulatory scrutiny is much higher, as well as when we think it makes sense for our shareholders because there are costs associated with it. We want to make sure that we jump over that limit so that we can, within the year, make sure we cover our costs.
Before we get into, and again, my, what you call conscious strategy is to work broad and get into more specific things. I do want to address, and I promised your people I would address one issue, and this is this robo-advisor announcement yesterday. Can you talk about, there is a lot of robo-advisors, but it seems right up the, you talk about E*TRADE, digital first, seems right up the strategy, your strategy.
Right. I think our product has a number of features which make it the pick of the litter, if you will. First of all, it's what I'd call a double hybrid product, and let me get into that. We're the only product in our space that allows an investor to choose from a passive-only approach or a hybrid passive and active approach. The investor can choose ETFs only or ETFs and mutual funds. We think that provides a greater set of opportunities for our investors. It's also a hybrid model because we stand ready to support those individuals who use the robo product when they call and have questions or concerns or wish to discuss a broader set of opportunities beyond robo. We're digitally hybrid and the product's hybrid. I think there's a couple important features which continue to place us on the side of our customers. One is the cash requirement is around circa 1%.
Okay.
We really are only requiring customers to have cash for that inevitable Dobie Gray moment when you get a little bit adrift and you have to come back to get the portfolio where you want it. The second is we have no proprietary product in the portfolio. We really feel great about the choices that the product has really representing what's best for the customers. We feel very good about the product's integrity with our heritage, and we think it's just an excellent product that we, quite frankly, co-engineered with our customers. We did a whole bunch of focus groups, did a whole bunch of beta tests, and so we think it's a co-engineered product that's going to do very well.
I'll ask the same question I did of Fred. This robo offering that you've announced, is it driven by more to position yourself for a generation of new investors that are perfectly content not, and again, you're a hybrid, you're going to have that human portion of it. But is it, or is it more driven to the wants and needs of current customers?
One of the things we like about the product is we think it will attract millennials who need some place to start. But also, let's not forget that our customers and customers in this space have a variety of needs. And we think this is just another tool, another opportunity to help those investors who may want to have some of their money in managed products, some of their money in robo, use robo to learn a bit about what works and doesn't work, and make some of their own investing decisions as well. So we think it's just another great product in our spectrum of things we do for our customers.
We'll certainly, because it fits right in, again, in with this theme of digital first, so we'll certainly be watching and monitoring and asking questions about the robo offering. Again, following my conscious strategy of the start broad and...
Well, Rich, that's why you're a virtuoso in this space, right?
Yeah, we don't have our glossary or our dictionary open. But you challenge us every earnings call with the words that you use. Anyway, so one of the things I want to ask, if we are, at least you may not agree that a true inflection point is, but it is giving you time to focus on things that you want, that the company needs to focus on.
Right.
So I guess the question is, can you just sort of outline your priorities? Because you do have capital, not issues, capital benefits, or a positive scenario on capital. You got the SIFI question. Again, I think the credit people, we could spend all this whole time talking about credit, but there is no credit. It doesn't appear like there's a credit issue. We'd be wasted our time there, it seems like.
So Rich, indulge me a bit and let me briefly adumbrate about recent history and then get into how we're thinking about things going forward. So for the last several years, we've really been focused on three main things. The first is to get ourselves reorganized in a way so that we could support what so many of my colleagues have been doing for years, and that's really focused on the customer. And we had to reorganize the company a bit because it had drifted away from being really, really focused on supporting a great customer experience. The second is we had to make a lot of progress on improving our risk management and risk culture, and along with that, our relationships with our supervisors, our regulators. And then the third was to really try and make as part of our calling card something that had slipped away, which is we wanted to be recognized as good stewards of our owners' capital. Now, we've been focusing on those things for a while, and you've seen the results of that. We saw two very heavy MOUs lifted, one at the bank and one at the parent. You've seen us make real progress in terms of the quality of the company's performance, which has led to us having the first ever investment-grade debt rating in the company's history, right? And that reflects not only where we are in capital, but how well the company's run, because you're aware how the debt agencies do those. We've been able to continue to grow the business organically, and I'm proud to say we've now started returning capital to shareholders for about 60% of the way through, about 60% of the way through our $800 million share repurchase program. So we think that those three things we focused on have demonstrably led to things where our owners can say, okay, those things you're doing, they make sense because we can see the results. Now, we'll continue to focus on those three things, but shifting what we're doing, right? So our priorities for going forward are continue to improve what we're doing for the active investor because it's such a critical set of customers. And so you've seen us introduce new charts, new tools, and really working hard to keep that active investor community happy with us. The second is today we get 10 or 12% of a customer's wallet share, and we think there's tremendous opportunity to grow that and to take our digital heritage and our tools and toolkits and go after more of the wallet share. And as a result, you've seen us introduce things such as tip ranks. You've seen us introduce new portfolio homepage. You've seen us introduce a series of tools and techniques for customers to use that we think is going to improve that experience. And then the third thing is, and frankly, we're about a year behind where I'd like us to be on this third topic, which is really improving the flow from our stock plan business into our core retail business. Today, after 12 months, we keep about 15% of a participant's proceeds. And that has been, without being, quite frankly, as good at the B2C portion of the business as we were on the B2B side of the business. So this year we're introducing, and just talked to our client base at our annual conference just a couple weeks ago, we're rolling out, and we'll have rolled out by the end of the year, by the end of the third quarter, a brand new participant web page that really talks to the type of actions and concerns and activities that a stock plan participant wants and needs to think about, which we believe will bind them, create a good experience with E-Trade, and edge up that 15% and move north. So those are the things we're doing to really take advantage of this inflection point.
So you brought up two things of interest to me, is certainly the stock plan component of E-Trade, because no one else has that. And again, I think you have the biggest portion of the S&P 500 customers that are your customers in that program.
That's correct.
And could you expound, I guess, for people that aren't as familiar with the platform and what you provide and the benefits it provides E-Trade right now? And you've talked a little bit about getting you said 15% or 12%.
We have 15% after 12 months.
Right, getting that higher, but right. More the potential.
So we administer, and we may administer for some of you, stock plans for very large companies in the United States. So you can think of Apple, you can think of Qualcomm, Prudential, Caterpillar. Our list of clients is very impressive, actually, they're nice people with whom to work. And we manage, essentially, if you want to think about it, the books and records of that stock plan. What's good about the model is every one of those participants has an E-Trade account. So their unvested portion of those awards or unexercised options show up in an E-Trade account. And when they're exercised and get monetized, they show up in an E-Trade account. Right. Now, some of these, particularly in broad-based plans, for some people, those proceeds every year are what they use for their Christmas savings or for vacations or perhaps a down payment on a house. But a lot of those assets, 15% today, stay with us. Those proceeds stay with us, and we intend to grow that by better engagement with participants, not only digitally, but we've started having office hours on campuses, starting having educational seminars for the employees, and we're starting to work with our business customers to work with them on things such as employee orientation to help their employees understand the value of having the stock plan that their company provides. So we think there's a very, very good opportunity.
And again, this is it's a business that that your peers or competitors, they don't enjoy that advantage of a potential feeder like you do.
That's not to the degree we do. I think we've really honed the science of it, yes.
The other thing that interests me is, given our history at covering the e-brokers for a long time, but we're still in the old world. We look at DARTs and the trade. And to hear, and to just to be objective, I think you've held your own, but, we watch the growth rate of DARTs and the changes in DARTs. So these changes in tools and functionality, is that targeted more at the DART market share?
Well, certainly the things we're doing for active traders are targeted at it. But I think, our business model is a little different than our competitors, both in terms of where we're focusing. And we get a little more vacillation month to month than some of our competitors do because of the stock plan business, right? And so some months when we're blowing darts out the top, it's because we've seen some activity in the stock plan business. And so we don't get overly obsessed with darts, but we keep a careful eye on it because it is a good indication of two things. It's a good indication of how well the tools we've introduced, the way we try to engage their customers, particularly active traders, how well that's worked, as well as just overall our customer sentiment, right? And so we think those things are important. But we obsess about trying to do the right things for our customers. We think that'll drive DARTs, but we don't get obsessed with any individual monthly change. And we just released May this morning 149,000 darts for May. That's off about 2% from last year. Overall, the volume this year is down about 2% year to date relative to last year. That's certainly within
Peers
a reasonable peer range, right?
Got it. The one thing I did was, we talked about all the things that have gone right with E*TRADE, and it has been a movie that's been a positive picture, so to speak.
Nice of you to say. Thanks, Rich.
The question now becomes, as we get excess capital, you've talked about what you could do with excess capital, and I think before the focus was always, is E*TRADE going to get bought? Are you willing to sell? I'm not so sure that's still not a question, but I think it's equally balanced now with what is E*TRADE going to do on the acquisition side. I think maybe the picture might not have been as clear, but I guess here's your opportunity again to.
Well, Rich, let's bring that puck over the blue line.
Yeah.
On would we be willing to.
I understand that language.
Would we be willing to sell? Of course, any public company is willing to sell, and we have a very responsible board of directors. If someone came with an appropriately rich offer, we would unquestionably entertain it. With regard to what we're doing with capital, I think it falls into three buckets. The first is, this management team and the board believes that when we have excess cash to deploy, that our job is to return it to the shareholders unless we have something really attractive in which to use the cash. Now, the most attractive thing we can do is continue to grow the business because it's returning nicely. We don't keep cash around just to keep cash around. We have the appropriate level of coverage we like to have, and my partner, our CFO, Mr. Pizzi, is absolutely ruthlessly focused on appropriate use of capital and yet having the right amount of cash around. The second is we're using capital to grow our balance sheet. That uses capital. Again, we think that provides a nice return, and that's the right trade-off for our owners. With regard to thinking about acquisitions, we're not holding capital to just think about it. We can think without having a capital cushion. We have that. Our thinking is pretty capital efficient. We think about three things in terms of potential acquisitions. The first, and obviously most attractive, would be adding scale in our core business. The second would be thinking about things that might be attendant to our stock plan business to help grow the suite of products or even grow scale there. The third would be things in more of the fintech space that's related to payments, wealth management, and those trust things. The things that are sort of more towards affiliated products with the brokerage space as opposed to branching out into unusual things. That's sort of the sphere of our thinking on that whole front you introduced.
I want to dig into that because I think that will sort of play into sort of where we want to go towards the end is about where E*TRADE's going. There's one other area that I just want to look into. Before, again, credit, we could have spent years ago, we could have spent 30 minutes talking about credit. That has become a non-issue. At least I think the most, I shouldn't say it's a non-issue, but it's reduced risk in the minds of most investors. The question that comes up now, are there opportunities? Again, it's only the last roll-off of the last $2.5 billion of home equity. The question is there any way to accelerate that? Has the loan sale, has the market changed? I'm not saying your views changed.
Well.
Has the opportunity.
Well, Rich, when I first sat behind my desk at E*TRADE, we had nearly $11 billion in assets. I had the good fortune, Mr. Pizzi was with us then, and he was instrumental in helping us think through how to break that into chunks where we could really think about how to manage it better. While the results have been good, I'd just like to say, I think the team's done a hell of a job managing that portfolio and continues to do a really good job on it. Now, we're below $5 billion, and I think the key inflection point, this is a real inflection point, Rich, is we've gotten.
Compared to my imagined inflection point.
No, we've gotten over 50% of the HELOCs have now moved into amortization.
Yep.
As those continue to amortize and we see how they perform, it's going to do several things. It clearly de-risks the portfolio, right? First of all, you see some pay down, and so the portfolio shrinks. But as you start to see payments, it de-risks the unknown exposure, right? The how are those actually going to perform? And the second is it makes it easier to demonstrate performance and potentially sell the loan portfolio. But today we think that holding those loans is in the best interest of our shareholders. We think that's been demonstrated over the last several quarters. And we think that's the right path. Now, Rich, if you want to show up at my office later today with a suitcase full of cash to buy these loans, we'll be welcoming you with open arms, because with the right price, we'd be happy to see the back of those loans.
I'd like to visit you. I may not have a suitcase full of cash. If I do, I may be not headed to your office. I may be headed someplace else.
Okay.
But I guess the other question I do want to just say on credit for one more
sure.
follow-up. Well, it's been three quarters of actually reserve releases,
mm-hmm.
and one of the beautiful things have been, and we've looked at it, has been driven by recovery.
Exactly.
And I know there's a whole accounting issue around recoveries and the guidance, but I guess the question is, is there anything more going on there? Again, we've seen three quarters.
Now, Rich, you just skated offside, right? Because
I was trying to
write it. Our models are driven by, you know, some pretty good science. We have a challenger model by a third party that's well respected. Our regulators look at this with very sharp focus, and our outside auditors look at this, right? So we feel we're doing the right terms of provisioning. We have had an unexpectedly welcomed high recovery rate, and those are very hard to predict. And there's no room for those in the model. Actually,
right. You know, from accounting standpoint.
From accounting standpoint, you just can't include those. So, you know, I feel we're doing the right thing, and I think we're monitoring it. And one of the reasons we do see recoveries is some of the things that the team does to work and get ahead of indications that there might be some issues. And so, you know, I think the team's been doing really well.
So we got about 3 minutes left. I think of all companies, certainly in the maybe here today, but at least in the brokerage space, the question more comes up with E-Trade, you know, what will it look like, you know, in 3, 5, because there is more potential here, whether we're at this imaginary inflection point or not, but there is more potential from the good things that you've accomplished, you know, the strong capital, again, the credit recovery, position in, you know, the reorganization of, you know, moving, clearing from underneath the bank, all the things that you've done to position the company now where it's, from a regulator standpoint, it appears to be in very strong, the MOU releases. So, and I think it's added because they know you're not in the lending business as of now. So the question becomes, what does E-Trade look like in 3, 5?
Well, let me tell you what we're working hard to do. The first is those three pillars of how we've been managing: the ruthless customer focus, the maintaining a strong risk and control culture, and trying to maintain a calling card that's credible that says we're good stewards of our owner's capital. We're going to continue down those, you know, as long as I'm in my seat, those are things we're going to really feature. What we're trying to create is, true to our heritage, a digitally focused business. And when we think about our competitors in the space, we cast our eyes more broadly than just people competing directly with us. We're trying to create an experience that stacks up with an experience people have at their favorite digital sites they visit, be it social media, be it shopping, be it whatever they may visit, because I believe that that's how people will judge the success of digital companies. They're going to compare us not just to some of the other players in the online brokerage space, but they're going to compare us to Google and Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the path we're on, and that's what people should expect to see from E-Trade in the future.
And one last follow-up. We have that. Does that, and I'll try to stay onside on this question. I totally agree I was offside, but I don't. But does that open up other opportunities if you stay focused on that strategy and competitive with that type of peer base? Does that open up other opportunities for E*TRADE beyond, say, the traditional product set that we're known for?
Well, I think let me make sure we don't have any icing here, Rich. This company does not intend to get into direct lending in any way. We don't think that's good because that would have been icing. But
yes.
I think as we continue to see innovations in fintech, the logical place you'd expect to see some of that land would be in support of our customers going forward. So, for example, the use of tip ranks to be able to bring analyst perspectives and social media trends and bloggers to our customers so they can think about sectors or companies or follow their favorite analyst and make decisions based upon what they're saying, are the type of digital tools and enhancements that you should expect to continue to see from E*TRADE.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rich.
I appreciate the insight, and again, my hat's off to what you've done.
The team's done very well.
And it's what the team has done.
Thanks.
And we've got this little, I didn't continue it. I think Paul helped me continue this hockey theme. So with that, no, you're not, in fact, hopefully you're nowhere near retiring, but we do have a small hockey gift for you.
It is very nice.
It's a Buffalo Sabres, we'll call this shirt. Because Paul,
oh, beautiful.
And Paul and I, in full disclosure, did catch a hockey game this year. And
so thank God it's not a Boston Bruins thing.
Exactly. I knew you'd turn it back. If
I would turn it back. So
anyway, thank you for your time.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.